Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm your radio, radio show. I'm your radio, radio show.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. It is episode 128 of the 909 podcast. It's myself and Andrea Cleary here. How are you doing, Andrea?
Hey, I'm good. I'm doing really well.
Good. So on this episode, we're going to be... Okay, well, am I telling people?
Yeah, tell them.
For fuck's sake. All right. Okay, this is the second time we're recording this podcast because we did it yesterday. And you had tech issues.
So yesterday's intro was me losing the plot because the previous hour had been me having like seriously intense tech issues between my computer, my Focusrite thing, my mic, my headphones, my internet connection. It was a nightmare. And then we got there in the end.
And all the while I was sitting here going, oh, well, we'll get it working.
Yeah, you're sitting there like teacher's pet, like, well, all my audio's working. But then...
Then I checked it during the recording, but then when I went back and listened to it, everything was all muffly and weird and bubbly. So basically, nothing was usable. And then we tried to use the Zoom backup, and I started editing this podcast already.
Yeah.
And I got 10 minutes in, I was like, I can't really hear myself on what I'm saying because I had to use the Zoom backup. And I was like, okay, right, we're just going to have to do it again. So here we are. Dedication.
Here we are again. It is now Friday. Here.
Yeah. It's now Friday, so fuck it. Fuck, we'll do it live.
We'll do it live. I'm going to be talking about Lana Del Rey's new album, Chemtrails Over the Country Club. What you, the listener, will hear is yesterday's review because I did everything perfectly. So you'll get to hear me on Thursday reviewing Lana Del Rey. And then you and I now are going to talk about what the future holds for the live events industry in Ireland and elsewhere.
Yeah, because I felt like it was now a year in from gigs being closed. We're checking in on what's been happening in the world of live music. What are the chances that live music will come back this year? How are we in Ireland affected by what's going on around the world, especially in the UK, because they're our closest neighbour? And what are the likely outcomes of what's going to happen over the next few months? I know that like there's a bit more, because it's spring, people are a bit more... you know, optimistic about things, and people are buying tickets for gigs. There's a series of gigs announced earlier this week from the likes of like Dry Cleaning, Wolf Alice, Girl in Red, and Metronomy. And it seemed to awaken a lot of people. I remember when I did the news thing about it on the site, just seemed to be a lot of interest all of a sudden. It was like, wow, people are not being paying attention. And I was seeing the stats and stuff on my side when I put up anything about gigs, you're just like, people have checked out. And it makes sense because, you know, it's been a year since venues in Ireland closed and elsewhere, 365 days plus. In the intervening year, we had a summer of guesswork, kind of shifting restrictions, levels, and carrot dangling about reduced capacity gigs, people talking about whether we could put on drive-in gigs, and then they were cancelled, and then festivals like Electric.
Yeah, drive-in gigs as a thing really didn't take off. Remember, those were the big things at the beginning. That really didn't happen. Did the Gavin James, it was Gavin James, wasn't it? Did that one ever go ahead?
No, it got pulled. Okay. I think it was I don't know if it wasn't officially told. I don't think go ahead, but there was some issue. It was like maybe the insurance or something like that. Or actually, I think it was told it was couldn't go ahead, but I think it was because of that reason as opposed to the actual setup of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that was the early time when people were trying to desperately to do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I compare it to, if you compare it to the theater world, for example, the theater world is kind of admitted to me anyway, what I can see, because there was a huge flurry of activity in theater last year with the Abbey Theatre stuff, and there is still some stuff happening, obviously.
But, yeah, it's still going on. Opera, the Irish opera scene is really adapting as well to the whole live stream thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, we're all trying to figure it out, but like, we've settled on live streams, that's fine. But what happened in the last year was, especially with festivals like Picnic, people were kind of going, oh, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? And then Melvin Mann was like, it is going to happen, don't worry about it. It's all be,
we're all going to be talking about something else in 2 weeks' time. Wasn't that it? Yeah.
That's it. So, I mean, there was a certain element of fatigue that has hit because of this, because, you know, people were being told different things, they were getting their hopes up, their hopes were being dashed. And very quickly, obviously, it became obvious that, you know, nothing was really going to happen. And then towards late last year, we had some small cap live shows, the kind of things that were just very tiny, outdoor and live stream shows as well, supported by government funding, which is the first time that a commercial sector like the live music industry, which is the first to close and it'll be the last to reopen. And the first time they've actually got money from the government, the live performance support scheme enabled people to put on live stream stuff and got money for hiring backstage and artists and all that kind of stuff. So that's currently opening again at the moment. It's 25 million for live performances that will occur on or before 30th of September 2021. And there's a whole range of other schemes that we've covered on the site as well and are currently available to people. So I won't go into them too much. So that's kind of like what's been going on at the moment. We're focusing on live streams. There's very little else happening. But I guess the reason I'm bringing this up now is because, you know, people are starting to think about this. You're seeing some more interest. You're seeing, you know, Festival Republic in the UK. You're seeing talk about whether the Picnic will go ahead or not again. Hearing things that people are saying, oh, the Electric Picnic will go ahead in one form or another. We will see. I don't think that is true. That's just something that people have to say for insurance reason, is my opinion. So I think that's one of the reasons why they're saying that kind of stuff. We're trying to toe and pedal this line that maybe, you know, something may happen so that people might buy tickets and then things will continue. Because promoters, no matter who they are, big or small, do need some cash flow, and they're hoping for those kind of things. So, but what's happening?
You stumbled across an interesting portmanteau there with what's actually happening. We're hoping at the moment.
We're hoping. Yeah, we're all full of hoping. So the UK obviously announced the big news a few weeks ago that they would reopen, fully reopen in the UK for gigs and events and all that kind of stuff from June 21st. And that also means no social distancing. And this is with the provision that vaccination targets are met and new COVID variants don't take hold. Obviously, that's a big provision at the moment. But of course, with the UK being way ahead of us in terms of vaccination, they are in a position where they can announce these kind of things, maybe, potentially. It is possible for them. Like, it's March now, we're talking June. They reckon so many people will be vaccinated that they'll be able to do non-social distancing gigs.
Midsummer is their big reopening day, isn't it? The 21st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. Same for Scotland as well. And what happened immediately after that announcement from Boris Johnson was that a lot of tickets start getting sold, 170,000 tickets from Live Nation events alone in 3 days. The Reading and Leeds Festival were like, we're back on, baby. And they were like, we sold out in 24 hours. So people started to think.
What are the lineups for Reading and Leeds? I haven't even looked. Hang on, right. You get Leeds, I'll get Reading. Reading lineup.
They're the same.
Sorry. Hang on. Reading Festival.
Oh, God. Is that it?
Liam Gallagher.
Yeah, of course.
Does he Queens play of the Stone Age. Yeah, I think he has some kind of deal with the Reading Festival. Hang on there now. Charlie XCX, Disclosure, Doja Cat, Liam Gallagher, Mabel, Catfish and the Bottom Men, Sigrid are kind of the main big ones. B Ba Doobie. which I avoided saying in case I said it wrong, but there we go.
I like the way you said it, though. I like the way you said
it. Bibadoobie? I don't know.
I honestly don't know. Yeah.
I've only seen it written down. Bibadoobie?
Yeah, me too. Bibadoobie. Yeah, looks right. Looks right to me. Mm. Okay, so that's Reading and Leeds. And what is also happening in Europe is that the festivals like Lowlands, who also have Liam Gallagher, the Chemical Brothers, Slaveford Mods and stuff like that on their lineup today in the Netherlands. They are planning to go ahead, but they also admit at the same time that they cannot predict the future in terms of international touring acts. And this is the thing at the moment. And their statement said, due to measures that may apply during Lowlands, it may turn out that not all acts will be able to attend. We are not only dependent on measures in the Netherlands, but also on those in countries where acts come from and are going to tour. The most important thing at the moment is that all these acts have wholeheartedly indicated they'll be there when the circumstances permit. That's a big if, you know.
Think wholeheartedly indicated that they'll be there is kind of like the thumbs up emoji in WhatsApp, through. Like, no bother. It'll totally be there. Yeah.
So, I mean, if any of these festivals do go ahead, a lot of the acts that are on the bill from international may or may not be able to travel. So a lot of them will be, a lot of the lineups will come from the national acts, local acts, that kind of stuff. Because it doesn't really make sense, and it's going to be very difficult in terms of logistics to get an international touring act across different countries when all the vaccination programs and people are in different places. There may be quarantines in place. How is that going to work? It's just not.
The B word.
Brexit in the UK, that could also affect things in terms of tours and the costs and prohibitive costs, all that kind of stuff. But also there's another big word that needs to be mentioned here, because that word is insurance. It's not sexy. It's not cool, but it's
speak
it's
for yourself.
driving a lot of issues in terms of these UK festivals, especially at the moment. The UK Culture Minister Caroline Dinnage has said that the government is reluctant to introduce an insurance scheme for music festivals this summer due to fears that the sector would be given false hope before pulling the rug from underneath them again. That's from an NME article. So that doesn't give promoters like even Melvin Men or anyone who's looking to put on a festival at the moment, and there's plenty of them being announced at the moment, that doesn't give a lot of people hope. That means
especially smaller festivals who can't afford. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about something like Reading or one of the kind of huge festivals, you'd imagine there'd be a little bit more leeway there.
Yeah, totally.
But for smaller festivals, that like you'd imagine there'd just be no point in putting it on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see that happening or not happening. But so that's a mixed message. It was like, we're going to reopen. So probably most likely those big, big festivals in the UK, it would be a miracle, I think, if they still went ahead at the moment based on that uncertainty, because the uncertainty is still there. The uncertainty in terms of the numbers and in terms of the money that people what promoter wants to put money down and then maybe lose it all with no backup plan or no safety net. But at the same time, the UK is doing some test events for crowds with no social distancing at the moment. The events research program ERP will come up soon and includes the World Snooker Championship final on April 17th, the FA Cup final at Wembley Stadium on May 15th, and the Brit Awards, the important Brit Awards at London's O2 Arena, also in May, 2 days later. So they are trying to do this. What is going on?
I don't know.
Your video is turned into the den. You've like VHS effect tape.
I didn't know this could happen. It's my camera's just gone nuts.
It's very cool.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
Okay. I don't know what happened there. Sorry. I just completely lost the track of what you were saying there.
Yeah, sure. No, it's fine.
All of our stuff is haunted this week.
Oh God, it's got it again.
Try to ignore it.
Okay.
We're going to get through this podcast one way or another now.
Yes, we are. What is also happening is the UK government is also considering using COVID-19 certificates to help prove people that have been vaccinated and all that kind of stuff, so that they can go to a large scale events, concerts, sports, all that kind of stuff. The UK Cultural Secretary Oliver Dowden said that the certificates would show if someone was vaccinated, amongst the 7 initiatives that UK is piloting to enable the mass return of fans this summer. So that's the other thing. I've seen a digital health kind of passport thing also being mentioned as one of the things that may be used. I don't the practicalities of actually doing that, though. We aren't in that position at the moment because, you know, okay, if it gets to June in the UK, what happens? Well, you have to prove you're vaccinated to go into an event. If not, you have to take a test on the door. Where do those people who have to take a test on the door, even if it's a 15-minute test, where do they hold? Where are they held? Where do they go? This is potentially
what if they're all really drunk?
What if they're all really drunk and touching each other?
Yeah.
Which they'd be likely to do, and they should be doing. Which leads us to the border issue. Because the UK is reopening at a faster rate than Ireland is, than the Republic of Ireland is, basically, Northern Irish acts, Northern Irish gigs and events could possibly go ahead way before the Republic of Ireland. And, you know, there isn't much to stop people from going up. So how is that going to practically work? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I have not really heard an awful lot about. And I think it could be very problematic down the line. What's going to happen is who's going to stop people from trying to go to an event? Like, we've been starved from events for a year. And if gigs start happening in Belfast or Derry or wherever else up north, what happens? What happens when someone from Dublin goes up on a bus and tries to go to a gig? And those things are, we don't really know yet how that's going to work. And it's a very unique situation that Ireland is in because of that. Because, you know, we've got two different systems operating on the same island. And that is, I don't know if it's really been thought about yet. I'm sure people are thinking about it, but I don't know if the Irish government are thinking about it, put it that way.
Yeah, because when it comes to borders in kind of like mainland Europe, like a lot of those countries are under the same kind of EU vaccination program as we are. So we are pretty unique in that sense. And I think it's going to be a nightmare. I really do.
Yeah, I think it's all quite unforeseen at the moment. But okay, so what can we hope for by the end of the year in terms of gigs? I would say it seems that anything before September is unlikely to happen in terms of even socially distant gigs, because until our vaccination program gets to a point where enough people are vaccinated and we can start to do socially distant gigs. I know there's a pushback obviously here in terms of like vaccination passports, all that kind of stuff. I don't know how that's going to shake out. No one really does. And you know, when you talk to promoters about this, everyone is as clueless as each other, really.
Well, I think for a while we're going to be looking to the UK and seeing how, like, when they're putting on bigger crowds that doesn't have social distancing in place, what that's actually going to mean, like if it does mean anything for the spread of COVID, or if they figure out ways to test people. Or I think having the UK be so far ahead of Europe in terms of its vaccine, it's kind of good for us because we can look to the UK and kind of take learnings from what they're doing, whether it's good or bad, you know.
So yeah, I mean, you're right. In a way, we get to see what happens when another country reopens, even though we aren't the ones who are able to go to those gigs. So yeah. I think we're definitely going to be in a different place. I mean, and certainly a lot of those gigs that I mentioned at the start that were being announced, they were being announced because they were coinciding with UK tours that were being announced. So those UK gigs or events may go ahead, but there's no guarantee that the Irish ones will, because some of them are listed for September, October, November, December. And here we will probably be doing socially distant gigs for some of this year, at least if they do reopen, and they could be reduced capacity. If promoters are put on tickets for sale for the likes of dry cleaning, for example, are they provisioning that they will have a reduced capacity? We don't really know the answer to that question for most.
It's
of the
too
shows.
Soon to tell for us. I think we're just too far behind.
Yeah. And then the likes of the Three Arena as well. I heard that they were sending out reduced capacity plans for people who wanted to book the shows. But then there's a whole load of other shows that are already booked in, like the likes of Dua Lipa, huge world tours, which are an absolute ball ache to reschedule, but they're just being constantly rescheduled. Mm. And that's what the promotion game is at the moment, is the rescheduling industry. So I can say, I think we could safely say that it'll be the earliest I could see a nightclub reopening is December, but it's probably going to be next year. And that is very upsetting for me personally. I'm really looking forward to that, and but look, I'm just looking forward to being at a gig again, obviously. But I'm a cautious optimist, is how.
Yeah, I mean, you've been rescheduling a couple of gigs since last March, so.
I mean, it's going to be 2 years. Those, like, the gig I have with Denise and God knows, and all of the PX crew, and from more and Bantam and all the friends. That's now going to happen 2 years after.
I mean, that's a gig that was scheduled before Denise released her album, before The Choice, before
18th of March, like, 2020.
Yeah, all of that. Like, so, it's, yeah, God.
Yeah, crazy stuff. So, look, I mean, I think that's where we're at the moment. And the answer really is we don't know, but we're going to be keeping an eye on the UK, what goes on there, and maybe hoping to learn a bit from what we could do better here in terms of the rollout of or rollback of gigs or whatever you want to call it. But also, I wanted to finish this section by playing two songs that kind of spoke to that experience of a year without gigs and from two different perspectives. The first song I'm going to play is from Charlotte Adigiri, who is a Belgian artist, who is one of the artists I saw. One of my last, like, gigs I saw was in Eurosonic 2020, in January 2020, in Groningen, and she was great. Clearly had a lot of activity. We were talking about doing a gig in Dublin as well, like that last May. Obviously, none of that could happen. But this song just came out last week, and it's the first time a year in that I've heard a song that directly references, you know, an artist's stasis and their inability to move forward and emerge as an artist. So here is a bit of Charlotte Didgeridoo's song. It's called Bear With Me and I'll Stand Before.
I say I'm finally home. They say there's dolphins in Venice. I say I'm finally home. But then again, what about music? I'm scared you'll forget my name. I can't help feeling so hopeless. Live streams weren't part of the dream. Bear with me and I'll stand back before you. Bear with me and I'll stand back before you. Bear with me and I'll stand back before you. Bear with me and I'll stand back.
Okay, that was Charlotte Adigiri. You may have heard the line there, live streams weren't part of the dream. No, they were not at all. And for a lot of people, they are feeling that. A lot of artists are feeling that. But that's the first song I've heard where somebody's really articulated that idea, you know, and especially a new emerging artist who was getting a lot of attention and doing really well. And then just to have to stall. We are growing closer as we watch the world drift apart, is what she says. It's another thing I heard in another song this week from a Dublin artist called Finch, who is a Dublin Burner Records artist. He did a song out last week called Soon, produced by Wheelhouse. And this is kind of from a personal perspective as opposed to an artist perspective. It's got a real Dublin vibe to it, I think. I'll just give you a background to the song. I think everyone has been reflecting on our current situation and consider we're a year into a pandemic. I felt this is the right track to bring out almost as if it's an anniversary. I didn't want this track to mirror the 6-1 news and regurgitate how we're all bollocksed. Instead, I wanted to see a glimmer of hope, the light at the end of the tunnel. It's why we called it Soon, and there's no time frame to normality's return. So it's an abstraction. So yeah, this is the Finch with Soon, and this kind of articulates the desire for people to get back and just experience that live balls again.
In the book, and that's a dollar bill. We'll be laughing it up, still coy like the realest Mac. Act all aloof if you try me, bulletproof. Yeah, me and my G's, no 50 cent rocking Argos's timepiece. And in the harbour or the Kezzy, where you'll find me. Simple man, double vodka red for a dime piece. Then a point, please. Point on my right in the law, I've a 90k job. I support Leinster and I vote Fianna Fáil. No, fuck that. No posh cosplaying here.
not for fear, nor for circumstance. Hope one day soon we get to fucking dance. I hope one day soon we get to fucking dance. I'm gonna cut shapes, cut loose when I get the chance. Floating as I am, another day down is another race ran is. As I am, another day down is another race run. It's all okay. It's alright. It's grand now. And I should spend my time not thinking of how to stand out right now.
It's grand now. Hopefully it will be grand in the future. And yeah, so I just thought I heard those this week. I thought it was a nice diptych of the same kind of idea from two sides of the coin. And so there we are. That is Charlotte Didry and Finch, and hopefully we'll get back to some live music some point in the future. I don't know.
I'm tonight going to be watching Pillow Queens at 7 Pillow Queens. PM. Very excited.
A holy show.
Very much looking forward to that. I think when everybody jumped onto live streams, I didn't quite embrace them as much. Like, I watch the Courage series, I watch other voices, but the kind of individual live streams I didn't watch a whole lot of. So now I'm sort of getting on that wavelength, on that bandwagon. So I'm looking forward to that tonight. Gonna have a little glass of wine with the girls, and by the girls I mean the members of Pillow Queens.
Great.
So yeah, that's the vibe.
Good stuff. All right, Andrea, it's time to talk about Lana Del Rey and Chemtrails over the country club. Let's hear the title track.
Wearing our jewels in the swimming pool, me and my sister just playing it cool under the chemtrails over the country club. Take out your turf and all of your jewels. Go to the market, the kids' swimming pools. Baby, what's your sign? My moon's in Leo, my Cancer is Sun. You won't play, you're no fun. Well, I don't care what they think. Drag racing, my little red sports car. I'm not unhinged or unhappy, I'm just wild. I'm on the run with you, my sweet love. There's nothing wrong contemplating God under the chemtrails over the country club. Wearing our jewels in the swimming pool, me and my sister just playing it cool under the chemtrails over the country club.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this album, actually. It is an album that, you know, in a month where there hasn't been much, it's nice to have heard from Lana. So yeah, so Chemtrails Over the Country Club, obviously following up 2019's Norman fucking Rockwell, an album that you, I, and the rest of the world adored, absolutely loved.
Absolutely.
And an album that I kind of still haven't stopped listening to be honest. I'm still very much happy being in that world. And, you know, Lana Del Rey, she's an artist who's almost obsessed with creating a legacy, or creating her own legacy. And that aspect of her music was something that didn't initially click with me. It actually kind of turned me off her a little bit. I found a lot of her early work kind of more concerned with romanticizing the American dream than actually dismantling it. And then with Norman fucking Rockwell, something shifted. It sunk in with me, and I think with a lot of other people. And it was kind of no surprise that such a timely, critical album struck a note with this generation in particular, the generation of millennials who are old enough now to start considering their own legacy and their own place within the world. And as a millennial artist, or an artist that creates music for millennials, I think she's very interesting because she engages with nostalgia in a way that is very familiar yeah. to millennials. It's very image based. Like most of our lives, we curate and share snapshots of our lives and are aware of and even kind of embracing artifice in a way that she also kind of does really, really well. And she's also very concerned with distilling whole generations and their problems and their sense of ennui into the idea of that kind of single image. So on Norman fucking Rockwell, I think the step up lyrically was massive. I think you felt that way about it as well. Like it was a huge, huge change from who she was to who she became. And now on Chemtrails, I think she's very much riding on the crest of that wave. And where Norman fucking Rockwell looked to America's past to say something about its present, Chemtrails is tracking Lana's career in a kind of similar narrative vein through this lens of love and fame and success. And I think she manages to kind of engage with America as an image really well on these last two albums. I think rather than romanticizing kind of problematic aspects of it, which I think she did a bit, or she kind of was guilty of beforehand, she kind of uses these images as backdrops to the shape-shifting relationship that millennials have with their own past and how they form their own narratives to kind of better understand themselves. So, you know, the iconography of the American dream, that's her playground. And I think it is the kind of post Norman fucking Rockwell Lana Del Rey is, she's very, very comfortable playing around with those ideas, actually experimenting within that. So I think through Norman fucking Rockwell did that for America, and now in Chemtrails she's kind of pairing it with the story of her own career. Like if Norman fucking Rockwell is a thesis, then Chemtrails Over the Country Club is a case study with Lana at the center of it. So I think it opens really interestingly, actually. I mean, the first thing to say about this album is that it is not the same kind of lush sonic soundscape that we got on Norman fucking Rockwell. It's incredibly pared back. If there are more than two instruments, there won't be more than four or five on each song. There's no big swelling strings. It's very, very pared back. And after the grand statements and grand instrumentation of Norman fucking Rockwell, the opening track of Chemtrails, White Dress, finds her whisper singing about working as a waitress, the last time that she felt that she had got this quote when she was 19 years old and her future in the music business was very bright and very hopeful. And there's a real sense of innocence there, a sense again like a nostalgia for simpler times. It's such a scene, and I felt seen, she says in it. It's a very romantic, archetypical image of the American dream, you know, the low paid worker at the cusp of making it, wearing a white dress, in love with this nameless man, feeling seen for the first time. It's all very Lana Del Rey. It's very kind of pared down to this one image. And then at the very end of the song, she kind of, she sings, it kind of makes me feel maybe I was better off in the closing lines. And just doing what she does really, really well, and what she did really well in that last album, which is to keep the kind of the crux of the image for the last crucial moment when it kind of matters the most. And I think White Dress is, I think it's a deeply millennial song, actually. Like, I think another defining characteristic that is often used against millennials is the sense imbued in us by our parents' generation that anything is possible if we work hard enough, anything's possible if we put our mind to it. And so that image of Lana working as a waitress and working towards getting her music career off the ground and singing in this like very high register, almost like parodying youth in that way, I think it captures that very sentimental last moment of innocence before the reality of fame and the capitalistic nature of success is both achieved and enforced on her. Like, maybe she was better off when the American dream was just a dream for her before, because achieving it exposes it for the lie that it is. I think it's a really cool way to distill a lot of the problems that she has with fame into a kind of an opening statement on the record. And that kind of whispered, subdued sonic space of the first song persists throughout the whole record. If Norman fucking Rockwell was, as she sang on that album, the fireball that was hurtling towards LA, then I think Chemtrails is the aftermath of that LA fireball. It's the eerie silence and the kind of, she's left in a state where the only story left is kind of being her own, is her own story and her own narrative. And it is fame that she's primarily concerned with throughout the album. Dark But Just a Game is another really interesting song, I think, that takes a look at the price of fame. She has lines like Pretty Little Fools, taking them for what they've got, The Best Ones Lost Their Mind. I think it captures an interesting disparity between the kind of frivolous nature of fame in the music industry and also the very serious consequences of playing that game. This comes up again later, actually, on Breaking Up Slowly, when Nikki Lane sings, "I don't want to live a life of regret. I don't want to end up like Tammy Wynette."
Oh, I love that song. Why isn't Nikki Lane credited on it, do you think? Odd.
Yeah, I didn't know that she was on it until I was reading The Genius, or that she was credited on it until I was reading the Genius annotations, which I thought was odd, or the Genius lyrics. But I think Dark But Just a Game is also a song that kind of reflects maybe the kind of digging in her heels side of Lana Del Rey that people find a little bit frustrating, or maybe other people love that about her. It is a frustrating allegiance to her own stances. Like, she's telling us she is not going to change, because to do so would put her in danger of her character vanishing into mediocrity. There's a line on it, "While the world is crazy, we're making out and in the parking lot." And I think that's a very telling image when it comes to Lana Del Rey, where the whole world could be burning around her, but her allegiance ultimately is to the aesthetic of that. And that's not something that is, I don't think, necessarily a bad thing. I think we saw what Artifice could do on that last record, and the value that using Artifice in music and in the kind of the images that surround it can have when you hold a mirror up to it, which she did so well on that last record. And we see some glimmers of it here. Like, I think the central image of the chemtrails flying over the country club is, for example, completely brilliant. Like, that encapsulates so much in terms of anxieties around like wealth and conspiracy and transparency and transience, and looking at the wealthy class from within and the privilege and distraction that wealth brings. And she engages with her own constructed mythology, which is a distinctly white, middle class, wealth obsessed class, really, that engages with aesthetics with the kind of freedom that only they can have. Like, she's wearing jewels in the swimming pool because she's not worried about losing them. Like, she's on the run with a lover and she's shopping at the Brentwood Market. She's wild and she's free and she's comparing astrological charts. But the freedom that she's singing about there, and that kind of wildness and freedom, is bound within class. And I think in that song, the country club just stands like a fortress within which she can play at being wild and free, but ultimately she's aware that she's engaging in a fantasy. And it's a fantasy that can only exist when you have the safety of wealth, and you have this the safety of playing within the aesthetics of wealth as well. And it's the best song on the album, I think, by a mile, because it is so like Norman fucking Rockwell, and it stands kind of apart. I have a lot of issues with this album, which I will get to, but I want to also mention the closer, For Free, which is a Joni Mitchell song, and she covers it with Wiseblood and Zella Day, who she performed it with on the last tour, and they both sing and feature on this one as well. And I think as a song, like, it sums up a lot of the themes of the album. There's the kind of disparity between famous musicians and musicians who are playing for free. I mean, the album opening up with Lana playing music for free in white dress, working through the cost of fame throughout the record, and now kind of circling back and watching a man playing a clarinet for free while she plays for fortune and curtain calls. I think that those two songs kind of bookend the album really, really well.
And it also has that jewels reference that kind of ties in with chemtrails as well, you know. I went shopping today for jewels.
Yeah, she's still very much wrapped up in that mythological aesthetic that she has of roses and jewels and the American flag and Cadillacs and the open road and all of that kind of stuff. But I think there are some songs that don't work as well for me on this album. I actually find the love songs on the album to be a bit lacking. And I think they lean a little bit too hard into the kind of curated image that she has been criticized for in the past. You know, the being the girlfriend of an alcoholic or the couple who ignore the world burning around them because they only have time for each other. And I think so we're talking about Tulsa Jesus Freak and actually Wild at Heart as well. I think those are both songs that had the potential to comment on the kind of navel-gazing selfishness that we find ourselves in the early stages of relationships, where you don't care about politics, you don't care about anything else, you just care about each other. And isn't that nice? And I just think that she falls short of actually saying anything interesting about those. I think she just presents us with an image. And it's not like it's an image we haven't seen from her before. I don't learn a lot about her from those two songs. And again, like, I feel like those songs would have been fine before Norman fucking Rockwell, but now that we know that she can use that she can use romanticization, I suppose, as a means for criticism on these tracks, it just kind of feels like she's just not bothered doing that. She doesn't want to hold up that mirror, you know. And let me love you like a woman is still a love song, and it's still relatively surface level, but she at least addresses her need to, like, get out of LA and her willingness to kind of leave her man behind to get out because the place is completely killing her. But again, I don't know what we truly learn about her own story, if that is what she's doing, if she is kind of offering us her narrative as an example of the American dream. I don't know what we learn about having three songs that seem to kind of say the same thing in a very, very similar way. Even musically, they're incredibly similar songs. And that to me is the big letdown on the album. But I think Chemtrails, the album, I think was destined to be more underwhelming than Norman fucking Rockwell. And I think she's aware of that as well. Like, it is stripped back. It's less concerned with the grand statements, and it's much more concerned with her own rise through fame and heartache and her reflecting on her self-mythology. And it's something she's aware of because she seems at moments in the album to kind of break out of it and see her character or her front-facing Lana Del Rey for the artifice that it is. And I think those are the most interesting moments on the album. Like, we learn that it's in the artifice, the nostalgia and the very carefully constructed aesthetic, that she feels safest as an artist and as a person and as a woman and as somebody in a relationship. And I think that is really interesting. Like, the price of fame as she sees it costs too much for people who give them their whole selves. So rather than offering her own story completely raw and meaningfully, she spends the time to create this narrative of what happened and how it happened. it doesn't work as well as Norman fucking Rockwell, because just simply it couldn't. The themes of that album went so far beyond herself and even beyond America or her America that it resonated. And it resonated at a time when people were ready to shift into a new political and social phase. Now we're kind of a little ways into that phase, and America is politically finding its feet after Trump. She's stepping away from these grander statements and looking inward again. And I mean, there's definitely more sincerity here than her pre-Norman fucking Rockwell days, but the artifice and the walls and the guards are still very much intact. But I think at least now she's comfortable with recognizing them for what they are. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of, yeah, those are my thoughts anyway.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be a companion album. It feels more a companion album, more of an epilogue, really, as opposed to, you know, it was supposed to come out last year and then it was quite delayed. So it came 8-9 months ago originally, I think.
Yeah.
She has already announced an actual follow-up as well to this.
Yeah.
On June 1st, called Rock Candy Sweet. So that's interesting.
I think she's definitely not stopping yet. Like, these two albums, in terms of her career, these two albums will stand together. Who knows about this third one? Maybe she's going to do it in a kind of a trilogy way. And they are companion pieces where, like I said, Norman Rockwell is this grand statement of intent, statement on the world, statement on, you know, the state of humanity. Whereas this album is much more inward looking, and it can kind of by the very virtue of what it is, it cannot resonate really in the same way, because we as listeners don't know what the price of fame is. We can only see it from the outside. So what she does really well on Chemtrails is to not present her story as her story, but to present it as a story. Or it's as though Norman fucking Rockwell was a kind of a blueprint, and she has applied that to her own life. She's still very much constructing the narrative, and she's still very much doing it in a way that is, I feel like it's really, really important to her that she gets the aesthetics right. And not just in her image and how she, and her music videos, which are a really important part of her as an artist, but also this is a very image-based album. Those lyrics that I mentioned about, like, the world is burning and we're kissing in the parking lot or whatever, she's really, really concerned with paring down the world and her understanding of the world and the changing political landscape into a very hyper romantic image of that could be a Norman Rockwell painting, or could it, but very much applied to her life. And I think that ultimately is the downfall of this record, because she isn't speaking to an America or a global landscape that a lot of us connected with on Norman Rockwell. Sure. Like when she sang about LA being in flames, when she sang about Kanye West, all of those things, they made sense to us because they were things that we were connecting with. Yeah. Whereas having, I guess, so much focus on problematic relationships, and I'm not somebody who's overly critical. I understand what she is doing when she's kind of romanticizing problematic relationships. I don't always understand it, and I don't always think that she gets it right. And I think there are a couple of times in this album where she doesn't get it right, actually. She's not actually using that kind of mythologizing, image-based, very romanticized idea of relationships in order to critique them. And I think that she's also not really managing to represent, as I know she thinks she's doing, because she said it before, she said that there needs to be space in the music industry for women who are submissive and for women who want to kind of play that role. I just don't think she manages to get it across in the love songs on this album. I think once again, where she is best is looking at the state of the world. This is not something that I would have ever said about Lana Del Rey 4 years ago, by the way, but I think she's an amazing artist to distill the state of the world and the anxieties of the world into a very curated, aesthetically pleasing and aesthetically satisfying image. And she doesn't do it enough here for me, but where she does do it, for example, on Chemtrails, for example, on White Dress, I think she does it brilliantly. So yeah, a disappointing record if I thought it was going to be as good as Norman Rockwell, but I kind of knew it wasn't. So ultimately, I ended up pleasantly surprised. I ended up coming out of this with a couple of Lana Del Rey songs that I think are as good as anything on Norman Rockwell. So,
well, it's certainly one of the most interesting albums we've had this month. It's probably the most interesting album in a while. If she has that magnetism in terms of storytelling, she doesn't always get it right. And more than that, announcing the new album seems like some sort of unfinished business that might be addressed for Lana. There's a lot of stuff about her Instagram account when she was saying, "Changing the world by putting my life and thoughts and love out there on the table 24/7, respect it." Yeah, so in announcing Rock Candy Sweet, which is supposedly out on June 1st, she also put some comments along the Harper's Bazaar article that highlighted her comments and said, "Just want to thank you again for the kind articles like this one for reminding me that my career was built on a cultural appropriation and glamorizing domestic abuse." She writes over a screenshot of the article, "I will continue to challenge those thoughts on my next record on June 1st, titled Rock Candy Sweet." So ever the self-promoter, even when announcing an album and clapping back.
Yeah, I mean, she's like being a Lana Del Rey fan, which I now sort of have to admit that I am, is really complicated because, and Louise Bruton wrote brilliantly on this in the Business Post a couple of weeks ago. For me, it's like standing in a gallery and looking at a painting and having an emotional response to it, and then having the artist walk up to you and explain what the painting means. It's like, I don't actually need that, and I don't need you to tell me that. Like, it's like the artist coming over and being like, "Everybody said that this was really bad and really offensive, but actually here's what I was trying to do." It's like, no, just trust me enough to understand what you're trying to do. And I think with Lana, like, I just ignore what she does on social media and all of that stuff, because I genuinely just think that someone needs to take the phone away from her. But I can't deny that when she gets it right, she gets it so, so right. And I don't like, I'm not that confident that she's going to have another Norman fucking Rockwell. I mean, she can't do that again. But I really hope that she continues to kind of examine what artifice means to her and to own it. Like, and I think that's what she, when she's good, it's within those times when she is owning her own self-mythologizing. And when she's bad, it's when she's falling into the traps of doing it, because to her it's easy. With the whole, you know, romanticizing domestic abuse thing, it's incredibly complicated. And again, it's one of those things that sometimes she's gotten right and sometimes she's gotten wrong. But she's an artist that I think we just have to, for me, I just kind of have to listen to her music and ignore everything else that she's doing. I really didn't like the music video for Chemtrails Over the Country Club.
Oh, and yeah, the kind of lupine.
Really, really stuff, didn't, yeah, like it.
Yeah.
And I actually honestly don't engage that much with her music videos, because to me they do feel a bit like she's explaining an aesthetic visually that I can understand sonically when she gets it right. When she does it well, I can understand it in the music and kind of take my own take something of my own from it. Whereas, yeah, maybe sometimes when when she's moving over into kind of visual aesthetic things, I feel like she's explaining it a bit too much to me. Maybe she is that artist kind of coming up and yeah.
Yeah, that's probably one of Lana's greatest achievements, is that she's managed to separate the visual and iconography aspect of her music from when we started with video games. Obviously, it's a great song, but it's very much tied in the package together. Now you can listen to an album like Norman Rockwell and Chemtrails separately without the art, without the visual aspect of it. And I find that quite refreshing, and it gives me it's very much a listening experience, and I like that as opposed to being both.
Well, Norman Rockwell as an album is the most visual thing she's ever done. Like there are images on that album that she sings about that I still think about to this day, and I don't need to see them rendered in music videos to understand them. Like when her lyrics are good, she can create worlds. And I think again with Chemtrails, she really with Chemtrails the song, she really hit the nail on the head with that. But and with White Dress, but elsewhere I found it really hard to kind of lean into how great she is as a visual songwriter. Because it just sort of, yeah, like I said, just sort of leans a little bit too heavy on what she finds comfortable.
Okay, let's play a bit of either White Dress or Breaking Up Slowly. What do you want to hear?
White Dress, please. But I still go back if I could do it all again. I thought because it made me feel like a god.
Lana Del Rey. Yeah, so what are you going to... So you're watching Pillow Queens tonight.
Yeah.
I don't have any plans really this weekend. Sure, I don't have plans.
Well, next weekend's the big weekend. Next weekend we get to eat chocolate.
Oh, yes.
And lambs, apparently, according to my Lidl and Aldi little magazines that come through the door. Lamb, which I don't like the idea of. Other things this month... was I've been getting into the Great Pottery Throwdown.
Oh yeah, yeah. What channel is this on?
It is Channel 4, so you can get it on all four. There's two seasons up there.
Yes.
The first season was hosted by Mel somebody. I can't remember her surname. And the second season is Siobhan Sweeney. She plays the nun in Derry Girls. She hosts it. She's absolutely brilliant. She's so, so good. You'll love it. I think it's better than Bake Off. I have cried in almost every episode because they're one of the judges is this like giant bear of a man who will just start crying at the mere sight of a good piece of pottery. And it's a really big hug. It's so, so nice. If you're not on the Great Pottery Throwdown, get on that. I mean, like the finale of season one, their big pottery thing that they had to make was a toilet. So there's pretty intense stuff happening. That's brilliant. What else have I been enjoying this month? Haven't been looking into a whole lot of new music, but For Those I Love's new or debut record is out today. There's a lot of chat in the Discord, people receiving theirs in the post. Very exciting. So I'm going to get on that now and probably listen to that over the weekend. But we've been chatting a bit recently about like how March is a has been a strange month for releases. I mean, we talked yesterday on the podcast about how there hasn't really been much happening, but then today we woke up and there just seemed to be all these releases all of a sudden. Like, we got new Tune Yards, new Antlers, For Those I Love. We've had two songs from CMAT, or music video from CMAT, a great new track from Saint Sister. Who else was there? Soda Blonde.
AMAC. Soda Blonde.
Yeah. So maybe this is, you know, we're kicking into gear now for April, after kind of a slow start to the year, certainly albums wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and it's great to see the For Those I Love album finally be out in the world, and to see it getting great reviews in that way, obviously.
Yeah.
Long time listeners will know we did a podcast special with Dave, and we chat to him summer of 2019, before the album was deleted off Bandcamp, and before it was now as it is released on September Recordings. And it's great that it's out there. Obviously, it's a very heavy album, so be aware of that if you're going in to listen to it. But it is, I think, it's a very rewarding album at the same time.
It is.
And again, yeah, it's been an absolutely brilliant week for Irish music. Like, the likes of Saint Sister announcing a new album, great song, karaoke song. Soda Blonde announcing a new album too. We got AMAC has a great video out today called New Friend.
I haven't seen that yet, actually. I must watch that. Yeah.
Bit mad. And then, yeah, like you said, there's plenty of stuff out. I'm looking forward to hearing the L. Michaels Affair album, which is kind of this, I don't know, L. Michaels Affair did a album, kind of a funk version of the first Wu-Tang album back in the day.
Oh, okay.
And now they kind of make cool, like, this one is inspired by Turkish style funk and Mumbai soul. So it's really interesting. Also, the Galway band New Dad had their debut 6-track EP out today.
Yeah, and Fionn Regan is back with a new song as well. So I saw in the Discord. So
yeah.
Loads of stuff going on. It's fantastic.
Sprints.
Really good.
Loads
Spring
of stuff
has sprung.
Happening. Jesus. All right.
Calm down, <That's> lads.
What else have I been doing? I have been reading Nisha Dolan's Exciting Times.
Oh, you enjoying it so far?
I'm almost finished, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Absolutely.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Sitting there for a while. Yeah, I love the contrast between the two people that the author is seeing in the book. And I think it's very interesting. Other than that, very little else.
I'm about to start Tracy Thorne's new book, which is exciting. I really enjoyed Naked at the Albert Hall. I think this is maybe her fifth book or something, or her fourth book. She's written a lot that I
that I
didn't know about. So I'm reviewing that. So I'll be reading that over the weekend. But that's okay. Yeah. There's loads going on compared to this time yesterday when we were having this exact same conversation. We were just complaining that there's nothing going on. It's great.
I know. I have to say, like, I do the new releases every Friday on the site, and I just kept expanding. And I was like, even I want to hear the Ben Howard album even as well. At the National, Aaron Dessner has produced it as well. And there's a Floating Points and Pharoah Sanders album out as well. And Tune Yards and Serpent With Feet as well. Really nice. I had a listen to that this morning. Lovely album. It's called Deacon. Really, he's got such a unique voice, and I think he's found a nice bright R&B sound that really matches it as well. I think it's really lovely, and there's some lovely some lines that really stood out to me on the first listen, which I can't remember right now, but don't want to ruin it for you. But you should go listen to that. It's great.
Awesome.
Okay. Cool. Great. That's it from us this week. We'll be back with something else next week.
Thanks, everyone.
And in the meantime, if you want to support us and join our Discord, it's patreon.com/Niler9. And Andrea is on a Substack.
Yep.
AndreaCleary.substack.com, which you will be moving soon to a new
I'll be platform. Moving to a new thing soon, but you can just sign up on that one and I'll move you over.
Yeah. And did we mentioned the CMAT video, didn't we? Yes,
we did. Of course. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Stunning.
Best thing of the week, I think, yesterday, seeing that. So, brilliant. That's great.
Okay.
We're all happy. Everyone's happy. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Enjoy.
Stay fresh.